Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
I'm funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the is so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Hello, North Face, Sexy Jacks. I'm Tom Allen. This is Matt Weber on the board. SP Futures up 13.75. We had a little bit of a pause yesterday, so we got to be up today, We kept it 2 days in a row. Trump's guy called Powell and said, remember our agreement. Remember I got your kids in jail or something, whatever it is. And that's probably a little harsh, but something's going on there. And it'd be interesting, yesterday we had some people actually talking about the 0.4% CPI number. And is that something we should be worried about? And evidently this morning the answer is no. Dow up 172, NASDAQ futures up 29. J.P. Morgan shares surge after bank posts record profit and revenue. How could you not? Jamie gets out there and talks platitudes with people. I want to be in that situation and tell people how it's done. Kevin, wouldn't you?
I always do. That's what I do for a living now.
You get yourself in a situation that no one else has been in the history of the friggin' world. See, you do all the stuff from the Fed, you're a primary dealer, you're one of four huge banks, you're the mouthpiece, you basically tell the Fed what to do, and then when they do it through you, and if you front-run those orders, that's just doing business as usual, and anybody else who tries to get in it, you put in jail. Just saying.
Sounds all right to me.
Yeah.
I just do the tell them how it's done part.
Yeah, well, that part's, yeah. You tell him how it's done. He pontificates. There's a difference. Pontificates.
Yeah, I hold court.
Yes.
And they can't leave.
That's right. And they can't leave. Explain something to me. How does the one girl on the Irish team that I honestly thought wasn't even playing or was hurt or disappeared be the number one draft pick in WNBA?
What do you mean wasn't playing or was hurt or disappeared?
I didn't hear her name called once in that final game.
Oh, well, she didn't have a great game.
Yeah.
When's
the last time you?
It's one game.
I'm just
it's
saying.
One game, and she got caught up driving into a lot of traffic against really good big players. And you know, okay, so it's one game. She's Jackie Young has really, really good all around skills.
Well, I'm sure she
does.
She
is the kind of player that no matter what your team is, she will fit in.
Well, that's
you
said that.
Pass,
so I believe
she'll
you.
Pass. You need someone who can score; she'll score. You need someone, who defends. She's just a really good all-around, multi-talented player.
I'm sure it's happened. I'm just being grouchy that the whenever I see somebody who's a number one pick in any sport, and I watch them in any game near the end of their career, it takes you about 2 seconds to pick them out, usually. But this is different. I mean, the girls around her had a really good game. You could not give Ogallala, whatever his name or her name is, the ball. So I understand, but it still seems.
Well, in addition to that, if you were to go back to a year ago when they played Connecticut in the Final Four, and Connecticut did what they had to try and take Arike Ogunbowale out of the game from a scoring standpoint, Jackie Young scored in the 30s.
Okay. Right.
So like I said, she'll give you what you need.
She
also has a whole bunch of triple doubles on the season because even though she's a guard, she'll get in there and mix it up and defend and rebound.
All right. Well, and I know the women's basketball is a little different because it's more team oriented in a lot of ways. But it seems like when somebody's a standout, even the Notre Dame guard in Indianapolis, even if you don't know anything about offensive line play, you watch the team play and you can't help but say, who's this guy? Even if you're not even trying to watch the line. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, who's this guy that keeps pancaking people?
Yeah, yeah. They make themselves known, usually, the people that are that much better than everybody else. But it's the first time, well, second time ever that all five people got drafted, right?
Yep. Yeah, and it's their second first overall pick in like 3 years, I think.
Who was the one before?
Jewel Lloyd.
That's right. And she's still here, or is she like in China or Europe making more money?
Well, she plays in Seattle.
Okay.
And in the WNBA, and then that's a summer league. So in the WNBA, it's a summer league, and then all their best players go to Europe and make real money.
Okay, because my buddy Beldo was telling me that Brittany Griner's in China or someplace, make a lot of dough.
Yeah, but you come back and play in the WNBA in the summer.
Oh, okay, I did not realize that they were.
Yeah, that's what they do. Now, if you know the name Diana Taurasi,
yeah,
great UConn guard and one of the all-time WNBA's all-time great players. She actually signed a contract for a Russian team, and as part of it, because she was getting like $2 million a year, agreed not to play in the WNBA for a couple of years. She came back and played since then, but when the contract expired. But it was an exclusive contract because they didn't want her coming back and getting injured in the summertime.
What's interesting. Hey, you guys, more you, Maddie, all kinds of traffic on the various financial talk shows lately about Disney making this massive comeback, and all of a sudden they're 6 months ago when all he did was talk about the streaming service, all you heard was how incredibly behind they were of anybody else. They shouldn't even try it, blah, blah, blah. This guy on yesterday, and actually let him talk, which is on CNBC, is kind of hard to do. And he was saying that Apple's a fade. They're not going to do anything. They're just going to be a one-year wonder in any of this streaming stuff. They're so far behind, they don't know what they're doing. That he's convinced that in a year or two that Disney is going to be just tromping all over Netflix. That they just have better and better content and a much more steady flow, and basically said that they were going to be dominating that industry as much as they are now, and Netflix is, enjoy it while you can. I don't know. Do you think this is all in like 6 months when everybody thought Disney was too far behind, never catch up, blah, blah, blah. Things change. I mean, 10 weeks ago, all I did was read about how the market was going in the crap hole, and now yesterday the fangs have picked up $600 billion in like 12 weeks, and the sky's the limit. Nothing can stop them now. And then I think we have an interesting chance of some really crazy crap happening this year, because if the inflation number pops up a little bit, you're going to see the Fed do something. And now whether that comes to some massive crisis with the president, I don't know. But this year could be amazingly interesting. I mean, I hope it isn't interesting in a bad way. I hope it's interesting that it kind of straightens some things out. I'd like to see a couple of different type of people on the Fed board. Maybe not the people Trump's putting there, but I'd like to see some different type of people. Not people beholden to the banks and the economists. And because there's economists, then there's economists. There's economists that think outside the box, and there's some that don't. And I mean, we sure have a few on this show that don't exactly sound like a Fed person, do they?
No.
Yeah.
Let's go back on that streaming stuff for a minute.
Yeah.
One of the things, when evaluating the industry that is worth considering is that, how do I want to say it, it's essentially built on commodity technology. It is built on all of the same kind of cloud infrastructure that Amazon and Microsoft sell on a large scale, and that lots of other small cloud providers have. So the ability to catch up is your ability to come up with content, not having the technological expertise to pull it off, because you can.
Well, yeah, if you got the dough, I mean, it's a big deal.
Yeah, it's a big investment issue. Does Disney have the dough? It's not. It hasn't been the greatest performing stock, but how much capital does the company have?
Well, it's they had a few people yesterday that would have been arguing with Mr. Weber big time on TV. He'd have been out there. He'd have been. I've seen him on TV before. He gestures a lot. He's like he's Italian or something, Matty. But you'd have been gesturing away, Maddie, because the story seems to have been that somebody's got a new streaming thing now where you essentially stream it to your what do you call it, your desktop computer. And the one lady says, well, isn't that a TV? The guy goes, well, yeah, sort of. Yeah, you're back to being right, like watching TV, but it's your desktop. But obviously you can probably take that stream and put it into your TV. And the bottom line is, they said, at the end of the day, when it's all shakes out, all these streaming services and everything, and I will say with one exception, because they don't know about Chicago, so I would be on Maddie's side with this a little bit. They said at the end of the day, you're going to end up in the same place as cable. You're just going to have the different streaming service. You're nut. By the time you add all up together, if you want to put the package back together, you're right back to being in cable. Because you're streaming the stuff from the same people. You're just having bits and pieces pile in. And maybe you can select better. But the one part they do miss, and I wonder if the city is ready for it, because they usually are, is the difference is if I could get everything streaming, and I probably could if I asked Maddie to put it together for me, my cable tax bill is $60 a month, which is, I'm going to say, I'll be nice and say it's inappropriate. They want $20 for...
It's preposterous. Preposterous. It is.
It's $20 for getting your on-air stations over cable or something. It's absolutely off the chart. I mean, and it...
And whatever happened to the legislation about having to provide a lifeline cable service that had your most basic things?
I think you can still get that
for really cheap. I definitely remember that being passed into law.
Yeah, but I think you could. The idea that that if you get rid of the quote TV part, that's where most of the tax is. But if your streaming part had to be upgraded to basically take care of the TV part as well, I mean, if it all comes in on the same wire, I understand that. But they'll just find a way to tax over there. But I mean, what I've been tempted to do.
Yeah, because where's it really going, Tom? It's going to wireless.
Oh.
Not
really.
More and more capacity via wireless. So it's total cash cow on the. On the cable side, it's not a growth industry anymore. Fiber because of the business need for reliable at that speed, and maybe fiber will become more the commodity that we see coming into providing home access is probably the best way I can put that. But otherwise, you're essentially going to be able to use your phone as your hotspot, and there's going to be enough capacity there that if you wanted to run a smart TV off of it, you could. We aren't there yet, but we're close. And so where I'm going with this is they're going to have to they already tax wireless, but they're going to have to tax the daylights out of it to recover what they're not going to get from cable.
Well, you're not going to be able to. There's laws against it. That's why, what I should do, even though it's a pain in the ass, and you gotta sign some contract and everything, is I should get the Dish. DirecTV is lousy, but the lousier. The Dish, there's no tax on it. Because anything comes off the air, the Supreme Court or whatever said you can't, the city can only tax a little bit of it because it's your 911, I don't know what it is, but they can just tax a little bit of it. So you'd save $60 a month with you wouldn't, because you'd still need a cable if you had a computer. But I'm not going to say never, a Luddite, but I think it would be incredibly inefficient after the whole world is wired just to have everybody be able to watch the Super Bowl at the same time off their phone at the same quality just because the idiots charge taxes on the stuff that's already there. I think it's a lot easier now to send somebody the stuff over the lines than it is over the air. So to have a $90 bazillion infrastructure just to get around the taxes, I think it's somewhat inefficient, don't you?
But I don't think it's being built out to get around the taxes. I think it's being built out because there's more and more demand for mobile for high speed mobile access to content.
Well, I don't deny
your access goes with you.
But you're still.
Whereas if it's cable into your house, it's fixed. You can watch it in your house. Now Comcast, as an example, is trying to do more Comcast Anywhere types of things, and they're bundling product to try and do that. But ultimately, they're doing that because they're doing it via their cell phone services.
Well, I refuse to believe that the same people who can't wait to have the man cave and the 90-foot TV where it looks like you're in a drive-in movie, you really should put the thing in the garage and go sit in the car and watch it. They're the same guys.
No, of course not. But it goes with you. So, you know, you have your tablet computer, not necessarily your smartphone, but, you know, some kind of mobile device. And then you have the man cave. When you're home, you have the man cave. When you're not home, you have it goes with you.
Well, I'm not...
And either way, if the delivery mechanism is wireless, you know, what do you care?
Well, I guess my point is when I get my cable bill, the part that I think is too high, I have one other person that's on the thing, so I have two sets of equipment, so it's like $180. Well, 65 of it is taxes. So I think it would be amazingly inefficient to have amazing amounts of other machinery and build out just to get around the $65, which just seems to be what we're doing, right?
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, but from an individual user standpoint,
well,
there is no build out.
I get that.
Honestly, from a cell phone carrier perspective, most of the build out is done. The coverage compared to where it was 10 years ago is night and day. I can vouch for that just based on where I live.
I'm not Mr. High Tech like you two dudes, but right now I refuse to believe that the signal my cell phone is getting is going to give me a high def picture of a Super Bowl game.
Well, yeah, it's because you have used the flip phone.
No, and I have the other one now. Just saying.
Okay.
Now, by the way, that's
it will, Tom. It will.
What are you guys going to do when Apple comes out with their flip phone that's more money than the other stuff? I'm now going to be in again?
I'm not going to buy it, but I don't buy any Apple products now. So, and not that I have anything against Apple products. It's just not, for my needs, I buy what I need.
Well, you see, what you're going to...
There's a lot of people that buy because they're technologists, and they love it.
Oh.
And I'm very aware of all of it, and I pay I pay close attention to it, but I only buy what I need.
Well, you two dudes better start saving up your little shekels, because I'm saving up mine. As soon as I can buy the flip phone, the same one that the president of France has, which is the most secure phone on earth, you guys will have to have one of those just to talk to me. Just saying.
Either that, well, I can save up my money and spend my money doing that, or I can just stop talking to you.
Well, that's what I'm saying, but you wouldn't do that.
Double bonus.
you would never do that. You'd have to have one phone, you can just talk to me and talk to Maddie. Secure.
Be like the bat phone.
Well, it'd be totally encrypted, end to end. I got a buddy, get a load of this. He's a good friend, and he's an attorney, and he is absolutely correct in this, by the way. He refuses to have any email, and he does not have doesn't have an email, and says that our government, it's not just people in office; it's everybody along the line. Because some of the stuff's done by states, they are so into your crap. Basically, even simple stuff like we have to have a. At PTI, every securities firm, they don't trust you to keep emails to your clients, right? Oh, come on. Why would you get rid of them? But that's other people. But so they make you have an approved person you get your email through, where they store every email ever coming into your place through that system. So if you send one to Tom at PTI Securities, these guys are going to hold it. And then even if I go buy a new machine and throw that one out, but Dan can always, the president of PTI, can always access that email coming in to anybody. But you can go back and say, you give me all the emails from Kevin O'Neill coming in a PTI thing for the last, 8 years, or actually 7 years they keep it. And they'll do it. So, in other words, my FINRA only approves, one or two people. Chuckle, from a guy from the South Side. Imagine that. Now there's a movement afoot that says if you do anything back and forth, say with your attorney, that if your stuff is held by a third party, they can access the stuff from the third party in a very blunt manner, give us all the emails about, such and such a whatever, lawsuit.
It should, I believe it still requires a subpoena.
It does, but then they're saying that the stuff that should be attorney-client privilege now becomes part of what they can discover. Which,
well, that's
a reach.
Bologna sausage.
But that's a reach. So, in other words, my buddy who's concerned about this has a right to be. And he says never text anybody, even your attorney. Talk to him. And never send. You know, you can ship some documents back and forth, but be real careful. Talk to him. And on the one hand, he's on a scale of 1 to 10. He's clearly a 10 in terms of paranoia. But it's not all wrong, Kevin. The text messages, to the extent they might be held by the phone company, I don't think they actually hold the content, do they? But I'm not sure if they do or not. But if you get it from a third-party source, all kinds of people, Democrats and Republicans now, are saying, oh, no, that doesn't attorney-client privilege. And look what, without getting a question of who's right, wrong, or in the barrel, look what the Trump-Cohen thing has done to attorney-client privilege. I mean, it's totally blown it up. Now,
well, it has, but that's Cohen blowing it up.
Well, they subpoenaed all that stuff. They were able to subpoena it, which, it was a little out there. But then it comes down to, what does attorney-client privilege come down to? I mean, these are definitions. You would think, Kevin, after 200 and God knows how many years we've been here, we wouldn't still be up in the air on this stuff. Now, okay, if you and I... if you're my attorney and Maddie Weber sues me for some reason or I get arrested for, smacking up somebody, which I would never do, but I do, and all of a sudden everything about that case, what you and I talk about, I mean, I think the world has decided that that's privileged. But if I ask you to, go pay off a golf debt for me, are you acting as a gopher or are you acting as my attorney? I mean, Trump and other people have, I think, pushed this thing to the limit, to the point where it was going to blow up someday, and now it blew up. And now, to be honest with you, most people don't know the definition, which is wrong, I think. I mean, in a lot of ways, what Cohen did for Trump was attorney-client privilege, and some stuff wasn't. But you're not seeing any sort of, like everything else you and I talk about, we're not seeing anybody sit down and say, okay, let's redefine this, let's make it make sense, and let's make it stick. Instead, it's just this open scab. What is attorney-client privilege? Can you even define it for me anymore after this case? I can't.
Well, and who wants to duke it out on every single instance?
Well, right. But what I'm saying is, if you're teaching law school right now, I know you're an instructor, not in law school. What do you say tomorrow if your lecture's on attorney-client privilege after the last 2 years? I wouldn't know what to say.
I'd probably tell them it's going to court every single time.
Yeah, well, that's...
Until we set precedent.
But, well, and is that... Do you want it to be a law or a right, or do you want it to be precedent? I mean, whenever I say something most people think is, like, really ignorant, like there is no law against insider trading, I'm right. There's all kinds of precedent. There's all kinds of SEC regulations. There has never has been... an actual law, if you look at the Constitution, where people in Congress spent a year or 2 years in committee figuring out what the hell exactly insider trading is, define it, who can do it, who can't, and put it out there for people to look at and say, that's the law. It's never been done, which to me is insane. But
well, yeah, if you're going to prosecute people for it, they probably ought to know what it is and ain't.
That's right. Well, now we will prosecute... if Matty Weber was a minority and he's from Hong Kong, we'll prosecute him. If you're from Jamie Dimon's place, you don't prosecute them. Well, hell, they're a bank. They know the Fed's buying, so they're buying ahead of them. What's wrong with that? Well, that's what they get to do. That's what banks do. Okay, that's fine. Just don't put the other guy in jail. I mean, whenever you see I don't have any problem with an open world, Kevin. Just don't be prosecuting somebody while you're not prosecuting another. That's just me. It's very suicide. SP Futures now up 16. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of HomeSource Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice-weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com, that's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, North Face Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Tomani, Mr. Kevin O'Neill. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. SP Futures now up 1450. As if he's up 34.25. Dow Futures up 187. We have J.P. Morgan, not Citigroup. Citigroup is Monday. J.P. Morgan is out with earnings that they crushed on.
It's up 265, trading 108.88. Straddle is only like a buck and a half, so it went long premium. You're up buck something, assuming it's still here when we open, but who knows if it will be or not. Around the rest of the world, we had some moves yesterday. We had Shanghai was way down, but now they bounced back in Asia a little bit. Even though the Shanghai is actually down a buck, the FXI, which is the Chinese ETF here, is up 53 cents, so that's interesting. Nikkei up 159.7%, Hang Seng up 70, that's 0.2% over in Europe. We've got rallies here as well, but not huge. DAX up 79, it's 7.7%, FTSE up 30.4%, CAC around up 24.4%. We've got oil back up huge, actually up 91 cents, it's 1.5%, 64.49. Brent up 82, 71.65. That spread is now virtually, we're back down to, we're $6.90. Actually, no, $7.10, right back kind of where it was. Rybrov gas, 204 now. It's creeping. Gold up 3.7 to 12.97, making back a little bit of a loss yesterday. Silver up 15 cents to 15.01. Story yesterday with interest rates now. The Fed maybe going to have to raise this year because the CPI went up, which is pure speculation, by the way, because the Fed said they weren't going to raise. That's what caused gold to crack yesterday, but it's coming back a little today. 12.95 seems to be the number everybody wants to hold. We'll see. What do you got for us, Trevi, with our sports, Manny?
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We have an issue downtown Madison at Michigan Avenue. A pedestrian was hit by a vehicle, which is obviously not good, and there's emergency crews on the scene there, and that's causing a slowdown right at Madison and Michigan, so keep that in mind as you're heading into the loop. Northwest side of the city, Harlem is closed north on the northbound side between Addison and Waveland due to an accident. And then on the south side, actually, that just went away, so apparently whatever that was is now clear. We have an accident with extrication, Thornton Lansing Road at Torrance Avenue down in the south suburbs, so that's a significant issue. And then out west in the western burbs, 55th at Route 83, there is a crash. But the expressways are looking great. No issues on the Edens or Kennedy. Eisenhower-Stevenson traffic building, but still very good for this hour. Southside expressways are behaving themselves. Weather today, lots of clouds in the forecast, but the rain should be gone, so that's good. We'll be cool, 5-6 degrees below normal as we'll reach a high of 52 with mostly cloudy skies. Right now it is mostly overcast and 46 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, rain in the forecast down in the Valley of the Sun and a high of just 74. Right now it's overcast and 67. In sports, Cubs took 2 of 3 at home from the Pirates, winning last night 2-0. Jose Quintana was very good. In fact, it was the best Cubs start of the season. 7 innings of shutout ball in the win. There was a 1-hour and 9-minute rain delay after the 7th, but the game did resume and the Cubs won in 9 innings, 2-0. Mike Trout and the Angels come to town this weekend for a 1:20 first pitch this afternoon. White Sox were off. They traveled to New York to take on the Yankees in Yankee Stadium tonight. Diamondbacks lost a one-run game to the Padres, 7-6. And, of course, the Masters is underway. Round one was yesterday. Bryson DeChambeau and Brooks Koepka are tied for the lead at 6-under. Phil Mickelson is just one shot back after he had a great first round at -5. Tiger Woods kind of sneaking around ahead of solid first round. He's -2, tied for 11th, 4 shots back. Chief.
The two things. I hope that person that got whacked by the car is okay. And when you give those reports now, Maddie, you have to let us know, was he or she on their cell phone and did they stop talking?
Right, yeah.
After me seeing the one here, thank God the girl wasn't hurt, but she went down, she saved her head in the cell phone and never stopped talking. It was a tear in my eye. Especially when the part where she wasn't
hurt. You got the cell phone for the driver and you have the cell phone for the pedestrian as well.
Yeah.
That's right.
But pedestrians walking across the middle of the street staring at the phone, God, if they were 5 years old, you'd crack them upside the head, you know. But you can't do it to 5 year olds, you can't do it to adults anymore, but, it's.
In our hood, now granted, it's a neighborhood, so it's a little different than Michigan and Madison in the dark, so I'm assuming that the pedestrian might have been at fault in this particular downtown issue, but in our hood, with all the stop signs and the dog walking and you know, a lot of pedestrian traffic and then the train right there and stuff, I mean, it's hard to drive that area. I mean, it's the bicyclists, the skateboarders, the, you know, like I said, people crossing, people walking dogs, people jogging. and they come out of nowhere. I mean, you really have to be patient when you're driving through Lincoln Park.
If you actually go walking, which I haven't done as much as I should lately, but I used to go do about 6-7 miles every Saturday, Sunday morning. I never worried about a car. Go through a, walk through a, when you're supposed to be the pedestrian, you're dodging bikes all the time because they don't think the stop sign is for them. And if they almost miss you, they flip you off.
Right.
I just want to see once one of those guys pulled over by a policeman. Of course, I want to see a policeman. I'll start with that. You don't see those guys anywhere. But anyway, Kevin, we have a...
Hey, but before you get off of there, I went and pulled up the box score for that championship game last Sunday. And, yeah, Jackie Young only had 4 points. She had teammates with 31 and 21. But she had 9 rebounds and 6 assists.
Okay. Well, that's, I'm just saying it's, normally in basketball, the number one draft pick in, let's put it this way. The guy from Duke, if you watch one of his games, you wouldn't not see him.
That's true.
Just saying. Hey,
that's true.
So how much cheering are you doing this morning for JP Morgan? Let's see, what do? They get your money for nothing, charge you fees basically out the behind.
And do they get checks for free, too?
Oh, I'm sure they do. And, and they'll either charge you 24% on your credit card plus fees. $110 billion last year, Kevin, were charged credit card interest and fees. Do you think the people that have credit cards, that have stuff on credit cards, that's somewhat of a barrier to success or what? And or if you've got too much money and you can't stuff it down somebody's throat at 24%, you can turn around and give it to the Fed overnight for 2.5% when you're paying zero for it. I can't even. If you were to go back 25 years and look at, and have some guys from the Fed say this is what was happening, they would. I think they'd all have a grabber right there at the table. I mean, this is insane.
It's a good model for the banks. Get the money for free.
Yeah,
and then charge obscene amounts to everyone.
Yes. But what you're doing is you're making sure they have enough capital so next time there's a screw-up in the economy, they'll be okay. So you're actually helping you. If you believe that, why are we believing that collectively?
Yeah, well, first of all, they won't be okay.
Right.
And second of all, to the extent that they're part of the cause, why should they be okay?
Well...
Now, I know we can't have the whole system collapse. I get that, but... impunity is another issue. So, next, I've said this with the auto bailouts as well, but you know what? Next time we bail out an industry, I would like my stock certificates.
Well,
I agree.
Let's have, just issue, we're taking stock in your company and we're issuing it to all of the taxpayers who are subsidizing you. We'll do that proportionally, and now if you recover, and then we all share in the benefit of it. How's that?
Well, no, you don't ever. That's not the way that works, Kevin.
I know it's not the way.
You're not at the proper level of creature. Just saying.
Well, I should be. I think I am. But
no, you're not. No, you're not. You're just not. So something like you might have to do. If you want to open up, say, a really nice restaurant, bar, whatever it is, computer store, you're going to have to go to somebody, say a guy like, Matty Weber, a guy who counts his pennies, and you say, Matty, I really could use some money for, like, a building, an inventory and all that kind of stuff, but guess what? I don't really have any. But why don't you just, like, give it to me? Okay. Well, do I, like, get a little piece of Kevin Inc.? Oh, no. No, you don't get that either. Well, why not? Well, because I don't want to give it to you, but I want you to give me the dough.
Now, so the American public gets to be a venture capitalist without being any of the benefits of being a venture capitalist.
But say, for instance, you are the White Sox. Now, the Cubs really didn't do this, even though they did a bunch of other stuff I'm not happy with. But now, say you're the White Sox, and you say and you get big Jim Thompson, who for whatever reason is head of this Metropolitan, was it not the, it's the Chicago Sports Stadium Authority, maybe? Is that what it is?
Something sounds like right.
Let's see. Well, we would really like this new park. Otherwise, we're going to leave. So what? Leave? Who cares? No. You got to understand. Every other city's giving people money. You got to give us money. Okay. Well, how about if we give you money to build a park? Okay. Now you guys really should pay for this. Now we don't want to pay for it. Well, okay. I understand that you don't want to pay for it. And by the way, you're the White Sox, and we like you, and Jerry Ryan's whatever. How about we charge everybody downtown who buys lunch 0.5% every time they buy a sandwich,
and we use that to pay for the stadium. Well, I really don't want to kind of screw those people, but I guess if you have to, because we sure don't want to pay.
Yeah, sounds legit.
Sounds legit. But now, which even so, Kevin, to take your thought one step further, I almost could go there. I mean, I wouldn't want to. I almost could go there if Big Jim were to say, well, you realize now we do own 30% of the club, or 35 or whatever it is. Oh, no, you don't. You don't get to do that. Wait a minute. We're giving you the big expense you have.
At the very least, do what they did in Milwaukee. The five counties that paid for it, to this day, they have nights where if you live in those counties, you get to come to the ballpark cheap, and they do this lots of times every year.
Well, okay, that'd work too.
So at least do some, you know, at least make a gesture.
Well, you're still screwing the poor guy downtown, buying his sandwich and paying an extra 5 cents or 10 cents or 25 cents, whatever it is, that absolutely hates the Sox, never goes to a game, or maybe has no legs. I mean, you're still getting money out of people that have no connection. And once you start doing that at any kind of level, you really screw everything up. And when you do it at the level of like the banks are, I mean, I honestly believe that the 2% interest that the Fed has kept everybody down on for the last 9 years is $350 billion a year from people that have savings and cash, because obviously business, other people have cash, not just in savings, and it moves it from one group to another. Now, the answer is why. Now, if you were to listen to, when you get used to that, now you've got a president who's not all that dumb, by the way, thinking, hey, my budget doesn't look so hot if all of a sudden we're at 5%. And I'm sure somebody's told him that every 1% in interest is now, what, $210 billion a year in interest is in payments. So you reach down to a level where you are, and now people say, we have to keep it here because look at the house we've built around the fact that the rates are down here. So permanently now we're going to have people who save getting nothing for their money, people who have the access to banks, which not everybody does. Matter of fact, I'm going to say 10% of the population does, other than by credit card. They can actually go get a loan at 3%. You're talking about companies buying their stock back or companies buying other companies. Because you and I, if we decide we want to buy XYZ biotech firm because we think they have something that's worthwhile and the place is worth $200 million, you think you and I are going to get a loan for like 3% to do that? Or a big company will. So the discontinuities you create, they become almost multiplying or whatever.
Perpetuating.
I don't know, Kevin, the people on the show here, we're going to have Carl on in a little bit, seem to see there's way more danger than this than you would is it the people who write the normal press or normal, they don't have been around long enough to see that any kind of a discontinuity to last that long is just a total screw up. And why should, you know, your mom or dad or somebody that you know has saved up $500,000, why should they spend the rest of their life getting nothing for it?
Well, and it becomes institutionalized, and that's the problem, is we don't do enough stuff temporarily. So let's just say there was good reason at one point. Well, yeah, but how many things do we do because at some point we've always done it?
Well, that's...
Which is a horrible reason to keep doing something.
Well, but whenever you and I were young, which is a while ago, I mean, when we'd go play softball 3 days, three games on a Sunday in the sun. There wasn't a person, Manny, that had a cooler. Well, if you had a cooler, you had beer in it. There was nobody that brought. There wasn't such a thing as bottled water. There were concrete, you know, drinking fountains in the park. And boy, you went over there and had a drink, and that was the best water you ever had. They never turned off. It was clean. That's what you did for 3 hours. And I don't know that anybody necessarily had heat stroke. Most people weren't heavy at the time. I mean, now the population has got to be 20 pounds heavier per person. But I'm saying I'm more than 20 pounds heavier. But my point is then you get to people become marathon runners and they start getting these other sports, and all of a sudden there's some research that said, hey, you really should drink some water while you're doing this, you idiots. And so people do. Then all of a sudden you get to the point where somebody is into this water thing so much that they drink like 8 bottles during a marathon and they croak because they drank too much. Well, okay, if you got interest rates at 6% and they go to 5.5%, yes, it's going to benefit most everybody in terms of businesses borrowing and blah, blah. The saver is going to get a little bit worse, but still 5.5% is pretty damn good. Or he's not going to get 5%. He'll get 3.5%. Still pretty damn good. Everything. But now you get down to the point where interest rates are 1.5. That nobody's really participating in except a few people. And say, well, we're going to go to 1. So what? I mean, the 1.5 doesn't affect. I mean, nobody can borrow at 1.5. So you're not. You've lost. What can I say, Kevin? You've lost the mid range, and we know that nothing really works at the fringes, right? No water is no good. Drinking out of a fire hydrant's no good, right? There's a balance to things, and now we're down at this one end of the interest rate, where to me the for a long time, not just one man's opinion for a second, the bad parts outweigh the good parts, at least over a long period of time. And I don't know, and the only people that seem to see that are people on this show. Everybody else is, oh, God, how can you raise interest rates? You're raising them from 1 to 1.25. What's the difference? Yeah, but you're raising interest rates. It's not the same as raising them from 9 to 10, you idiot. But I don't think, is it?
Well, it isn't, but everybody's counting, you know, the impact. You know, if you're the big players, you're counting the impact in, and the dollar amount becomes big. So,
I guess,
you know, I get what that's about, but that doesn't make it right.
Well, but it's like
okay, so the dollar amount of the benefit is what was really big, and sorry, we're turning off the spigot.
But there's a certain amount of common sense. If you go to run the marathon, and you've got a belt on with 5 things of water. Okay, that's probably a good thing. I've never run a marathon. But if you walk up and the guy's got 4 belts on with 5, but you might say, no, you're too far at this. I mean, you know, I'm saying that there comes a point where no matter what it is, you don't want the last guy to, you don't want the doorbell to ring and have somebody another case of beer. Even at the best party, there's a time at which it's probably not appropriate, right?
Well, I remember when that wasn't true, but but I was younger then.
Yes, but at some point we all had to go to sleep. I mean, right? I mean, hey,
yeah, at some point, if you didn't go to sleep, sleep found you.
I mean, hey, buddy, it's daylight. You missed the party. come back tonight, you know, right? I mean,
yeah. Or you go to sleep right after breakfast.
Oh, by the way, leave the beer. You know, by the way, leave the beer. Although I did say the guys up in
Milwaukee. And the cannolis.
Yeah, the guys in Milwaukee. I'll say those dudes had the fastest turnaround time, though, Kevin. There's this Evans house up there that one of my buddies, you remember him, Bill Moriarty?
Yeah, I remember. I went up with you a time or two.
And Manny, there was one of the bathrooms, they couldn't close the window, right? So that was your access point. So you put somebody on somebody's shoulder, and they'd go in, and you know, the thing was pretty much open. Nobody cared. So in you went, and because nobody was staying there in the summertime. So it wasn't like people had their stuff. So he brought a sleeping bag, and you crashed on the living room floor. And so 5 of us pile in there, or we crash, and all of a sudden, some guy's shaking me. I'm like, hey, who the hell is this? I look around me, there's like 20 guys there. We weren't the only ones. And the guy goes, hey, we're going up. We're going up. One bar opens at 6. We're going over to Old Fuzz Nuts and grab some liver sausage sandwiches and some beers. They open at 6. I go, are you out of your mind? We just got here. Hey, we got here later than you. What's the matter? Are you guys a bunch of weasels? Never mind. Go. Have a good time.
Yes, enjoy yourself.
Enjoy yourself. We're like, Manny, when you roll in at 4 and somebody's waking you up at 6 to go have a drink, it's like, no, we've had enough.
Yeah.
But there comes a point. Plus, I really didn't need a liver sausage sandwich at that hour either, probably. But anyway, there's always.
I don't know that you needed a liver sausage sandwich at any time.
At any time.
So definitely not at that hour.
But they allegedly were very good, wherever bar that was. But Old Fuzz Nuts was the bartender. That much I remember, because that's not a name you.
Yeah, it's not a name you forget, and it's not one you, and you don't want to know the etymology.
Oh, no, you don't want to know how you, whatever. It's just, so, Kevin, what do you make of, you know, the change in tone? I know I keep shifting around, but to me it's all the same subject. The shift in tone coming out of Illinois with the new governor and where that's headed. We have a new mayor. We have kind of crazy stuff happening in Washington, which continues to be some good, some bad, I think. I just really do wish, I don't know why this is, but that when we open up a subject like the president, by the way, is very, very good at doing. I'm glad he has on a lot of these things. I just wish we could kind of knock one off and put one to bed before we open the next one. We run the risk of just having almost chaos if all these things that at least people thought had a definition before did, maybe never did, kind of get, you know, ripped open yet we're on to the next one. And I don't, not so sure that at the end of the day, we might just end up having a bunch of chaos. Because, I mean, are we making any definitions, or are we just arguing?
Well, you know, I've worked around and for people who do constantly stir the pot. You know, one of them was described as the tornado that comes through and just, you know, it tears everything asunder. Not my management style, let me put it that way. I don't approve of it. I don't think it's wise. But it definitely is Trump's management style. He is, first of all, he multitasks like few others. It's always stuff going, and I think he tends to deal with government as a series of projects, much like he did in his professional life, which, you know, real estate development is a series of projects. And so that's how he does it. And it's, you know, launch a project, move on, and he, you know, his frustrations get to be when the project doesn't make the progress he expected it to make, and that's when people get fired. And that, you know, it brings a whole chaotic tone to government, because that's not how government has been operating for a long time. And I'm not saying it's good or bad, but what I am saying is that smart bosses tend to you want to push. Let me put it that way: you want to push, but you don't want to make it dysfunctional. And so, you know, it takes a little bit of a deft hand to guide your way into a different way of doing things, and we definitely do not see that.
You know, you wonder, Kevin, how, if, let's say his reputation from what, on the real estate development side, from what I understand, and this is the most bizarre thing, for somebody who, I'm going to say I have a real serious weakness in a lot of ways, in that I pretty much believe everybody to their face. And I mean, because, and that came from an upbringing that, we lived in St. John Fisher. You grew up, nobody locked their door. Went to Notre Dame, you never locked your dorm door. And if anybody had a $10 bill, it could sit on top of your desk for 6 months and it would never disappear. The only time we locked our door was when there was a football game, because everybody was gone. Or it's the only time anybody ever got robbed, right? And so then I went to the trading floor, and the thought, of anybody there committing any sort of a property crime or cheating at golf, even at a golf outing from the floor, that ever got back to people when everybody's livelihood was believing somebody face to face, is, you know, I mean, you would never, the guy wouldn't get another trade if you knew he stole money at a $5,000 cattle cutter golf outing. I mean, it would never happen. Now, this guy, I must have talked to 15 people, Kevin, maybe that's too many, 10, 12, that have done work for the guy or knew, like, family members that did, that got stiffed and didn't get paid. And yet tomorrow, if the guy said, I'm building another building, people be lined up to do work for him. Why? I don't get it. Why would you just say, I'll sit this one out? Why do I want to do the work, the guy not pay me, no progress payments, and, oh, by the way, I got to assume he'll get paid, and I'll settle for half of it, and blah, blah, blah. Why is that? I've heard people tell me that they clean his buildings for 3 months and all of a sudden they don't get paid, and he says he found a cigarette butt in one of the lobbies. I'm not paying you for the last month. You did a crap job. Yet, when that guy gets fired, this must be news to people. I mean, stuff gets around. Yet the next day there's another guy cleaning a building.
Don't know why, unless people, you know, I suppose you can consciously manage risk and say, yeah, 80% of the people get paid on time, regularly, with no issues, and therefore, I'm willing to take the risk because it's good. It's a good deal if I keep, you know, as long as I get paid. I don't know. You know, is there conscious risk management, or does everybody think that I'm the one that can be different?
Well, if you were in Milton Friedman,
I have no idea, Tom. I wouldn't begin to speculate on that. I know I don't approve of the way the man conducted business. I didn't approve of it before he ever considered being a presidential candidate. Why people think I'm going to be the one who's different? I don't know.
But I mean, I know your mom. I knew your mom. You knew mine. at age 7, they would say, if you do that, nobody's going to do business with you. Yet they were wrong, right? People are scrambling to do business with you. I mean, if you were in Milton Friedman's class, he'd say, everybody, if it's a 20% failure rate, like you're saying, everybody will charge 20% more. That's the economic answer, right?
But yeah, except that you ain't going to get the Trump bid because he's squeezed you. He's, you know, he was the Walmart of real estate developers.
Right. So I mean, but none of the stuff we learned seems to work with a lot of successful people do things we would never think of doing, and yet they seem to be doing better than we are. You know, so it's. Anyway, Kevin, thank you very much, bud. We will talk again on Wednesday. Have a good weekend. SP Futures up 14.75. NASDAQ Futures up 31.25. Hey, Mr. Carl Denninger, we come back to talk about last week's labor numbers and other things. Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs. Interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous. No return on cash balances. May have some invested a little too much for comfort. Some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTISecurities.com, or feel free to email me at john@PTISecurities.com. That's john@PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Something happening.
Hello, everybody. It's Dr. Jackson. I'm Tom Howard. Mr. Matt Weber on the board with Mr. Carl Denninger as well. S&P futures up 16.75. NASDAQ futures up $39. If you thought that all the bad press and all the stuff happening with Wells Fargo and the guy leaving and a whole bit makes any difference whatsoever to their business, grab another beer. They just came out beat on both the top and bottom line. Stocks up $1.21. So it makes zero difference no matter how you treat people at that level. If you're a monopolist, you just get to go, right, Carl?
Frankly, I'm more than a little surprised. Although I guess I shouldn't be. How do you pull the stuff that this company specifically and most of the large banks did all the way in the lead up to 2008 and get caught, which Wells Fargo was of course one of the centroid elements of option arms and, you know, all the other fun games, right? Then you go on to hose people, literally, putting accounts out there in people's names that they never ordered, foreclosing on them when they didn't actually miss payments, forced placing insurance for people that already had insurance. You know, the list goes on, right? And I guess none of this really matters because you continue to hose people and make money by doing it, and the market says, yeah, this is all okay, and the regulator says this is all okay, and the stock's up a buck and change.
Carl, there was a class I took. I never dreamed. This was the one class in grad school that was on a million different topics. It basically applied stuff that you learn elsewhere to maybe real-life situations. Like the guy did, he had a contract from the government to use what was new at the time. Remember regression analysis?
Yep.
With linear programming or whatever you want to call that stuff. And he tried to put together a way to actually quantify care in hospitals. And he did a bunch of other stuff. But he had essentially a common sense economic view essentially to life and to virtually everything. And he had a class one day, or maybe it was 1 week, it was on crime and punishment. And said, if you take away the murders and those kinds of things, which at the time, there were many of them, and there were always murders, and, you know, violent rape and, you know, whatever, well, any kind of rape is violent, but I mean, any sort of violent thing, pull those out. Because that leaves you at about 90 to 95% of all crime, really, is for money. Correct? He said, so you really don't need jails, because people that are doing crimes for money, money is very important to them. He said, so by definition, if you assume people that are crooks are mostly rational, which certainly if you're just a money crook, you probably are. You just don't want to work, right? But you're still rational. He said, the simplest thing is you have to make the penalty, whatever it is somebody stole, divided by the chance of getting caught.
Right.
So at least it's a zero-sum game. If you steal a case of beer from the 7-Eleven, you got a 50-50 chance of being caught, and the penalty is two cases of beer. You're going to say to your buddy, you know what? It's not worth it. Right? Not to mention, if you made it three cases, we actually lost on the deal. He says, just make it even. To where a rational person would say, now somebody, there's always going to be a guy who says, we're clever, we don't have a 50% chance of being caught because we're faster. We're going to have a 40% chance, so it's still a pretty good deal for us. You're always going to get that, I suppose. But by and large, he says, just basically, but the banks, what you've seen and what I've seen, and I think what you're scratching your head about, is clearly the fines and those kinds of things did not match what they should have been, because they virtually had zero chance of being caught.
So say 20% chance. It had to be, they had to almost blow up the economy to get caught. So if they stole $1 billion, the fine should be, you know, if it's a 20% chance, it should be $5 billion. And the fine was really $100 million. So if you're
right, and the bigger problem though, and this is something that I've hammered on repeatedly over the years, is that when you look at entrepreneurship, and this showed up in the employment report this last month, and it's been showing up in the employment report for quite a while, there are 500,000 fewer entrepreneurs in the economy today than there were a year ago.
And I mean, that should not shock you, by the way.
Well, no, it shouldn't, but one of the reasons is that a rational entrepreneur says, well, I may have a fair bit of money. I mean, you know, look at people that have gotten busted recently that have a fair bit of money. Avenatti, anybody? Hello?
Yeah.
Right. But what he doesn't have is the ability to either say, well, if you arrest me, 10,000 people are going to lose their job. Right. Or if you arrest me, I'm going to take 10 high-ranking politicians down with me, and they're going to go to jail, too.
Right.
Okay? He can't do either of those two things. And so they arrest him. Now, assuming that the allegations they made are true, he deserves to be arrested. However, the problem is this. The guy who I compete against, if I'm an entrepreneur, might be Jeff Bezos.
Right. Yeah.
And he can cheat all he wants because they're not going to arrest him.
Correct.
All right. So, but I can't cheat. And so if I'm an unprincipled prick and I'm willing to break every rule in the book, I still lose.
Right.
Because I'll go to jail. He won't. And that means I will be driven bankrupt or busted as soon as he decides that that's what he wants to do. And so now my entrepreneurship is essentially at his sufferance.
Well, right. And I mean, I would...
why would I do that? Why would I do that, though?
Well, just go even simpler. If you make money, you owe the government 35%. If you lose the million in your investments, you get to take off $3,000 a year for the rest of your life.
Right.
That's kind of a bad trade.
Well, and how many of us have made bad trades? All of us, yeah. Right? So I mean... why isn't that dollar for dollar deductible against my, you know, income until it's zero? Well, because the government, you know, rigs the game, basically. But the real problem here is that as long as everybody is playing the same rigged game, at least as an entrepreneur, I have a level playing field. The government is still rigging the game with the capital gains and capital loss rules and things like this. But at least if the guy that knows 25 politicians that are also scamming, or who has, you know, 10 or 15,000 employees, at least he has to live with the same set of consequences that I have to live with when he fails, okay? If, on the other hand, he can hose me and doesn't have any consequence, and yet if I try to do the same thing to him, I'm going to either be bankrupted or tossed in prison. Now you've put the thumb on the scale in such a way that you have to be a special brand of stupid to do something that could really take off. Because the only way that you will succeed is not only to have the better idea, not only to be more efficient, you know, better, faster, cheaper, pick any two, right, is the old saw. Well, you know, what you're trying to do as an entrepreneur is all three. But you also have to get large enough, fast enough, embedded enough that you now acquire that immunity. So you take a look at, for example, you know, Uber just filed an S-1, right? You know, it's going to go public. Hey, fantastic, except the company's never made a nickel.
That would be the time, right?
Well,
in today's world, that would be the time.
Think about this.
Yeah.
What did they do? They got big enough, fast enough, that even though they are an intentional money-losing business, and by the way, a predatory money-losing business, which is supposed to be illegal... Hello.
Right.
We're just going to let all these guys that got big enough that fast, they get to cash out. And do the drivers actually make any money?
No,
well,
maybe a little bit.
Probably not very much. Does the company make any money? No, according to their S-1. Does the company have a plan or a way to make money and make all of those accumulated losses back in the future? Well, no. The S-1 says not. Now, interestingly enough...
Yeah, they do. Driverless cars.
Well, maybe, but then all those people that they employed, they lose their jobs, right?
Well, they don't care about them. But they will flat out tell
you. Obviously, they don't care about them. But here's the thing that's interesting about this. When I was running a startup, and I had no history, but I did have a plan to make money, if I wanted to sell stock to people, I had to sell it only to accredited investors, people that could look at that risk and say, well, you know, gee, there's a 4 out of 5 chance there that I just took all those $100 bills and I lit them on fire in the backyard.
Right.
But here is a company that, because they filed an S-1, can say, well, you know, we only lost a couple $1 billion last year, and we were in a couple billion the year before that, and a few billion the year before that. And, gee, you know, $15 billion worth of accumulated losses. And we have absolutely no reasonable expectation that this is ever going to change, but you too can pay $50 a share.
Right. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, it's. Well, you mentioned. What's the attorney's name? The guy.
Avenatti.
Yeah. Okay. But I've done a lot of expert witness stuff, and I know a lot of people in the industry and firms that have gotten arbitrations and sued and stuff by people. And there's this incredible cottage industry of the, they call them these plaintiff's lawyers.
Right.
And it's the same thing that's in the, everybody walking in with the thing on their neck from the car crash, or, you know, every drug on earth that's messed people up. Not that the drugs haven't messed people up, they have. But when you walk in and you drop a suit on some firm, or actually be an arbitration in this case, and I'm sitting there, inevitably, Kyle, it's the point now where this client demands $2 million. The first conversation is, we'll take 200. The first conversation.
Right.
I mean, if that isn't extortion, I don't know what is. But obviously, if you're going against Nike, where there is no, quote, arbitration system, and you just walk in and say, hey, I've got a lot of goods on you guys, or I'm going to blow this up in public, which is the same as every real arbitration. I'm not saying some aren't legit, because I've been an expert witness both sides. I wasn't always on the side that was right either. But the fact is, I try to do the job right. But the point is, a lot of it is just extortion. And when you start reading the pleadings from the same attorney group, they sound the same. They got a boilerplate stuff. Sometimes they even have the wrong state and the wrong name in there.
Yeah.
They're just going around extorting from people. And there's no pushback at all on them. You know, because if it's a small, especially if it's a smaller firm, big firm, all right, how much is it going to cost to litigate $100,000, all right, bid these guys $100,000 to go away, which is exactly what you don't want to do, because then it does nothing to encourage them, right? But I mean, it happens. It's happening now. Did he try and extort Nike with the same thing as, I mean, if he really has something, which I think he probably does, the thought, Carl, of Adidas paying off all these people to get the athletes to the right school, when they compete with Under Armour and Nike in that space, and the fact that Nike and Under Armour never wrote a check, I guess, you know, I'll take a tomato from the team and a town square, but Adidas didn't think of it themselves. And somewhere in this mess of AAU, which nobody seems to be able to get their fingers on, and the shoe companies, that now there's like three levels of corruption. It used to be just the high school. If the high school coach was straight and the college was straight, everybody was pretty straight. The alumni always had to worry about it a little bit. But now you've got really two other layers, right? You got the shoe companies and you got the AAU delivering people to somebody.
Yeah.
I mean, there's nobody that can keep sort of track of that. Hey, can I shift gears on you a little bit? I was actually talking to a couple guys from the Fed last night, economists for the Fed, and I was kind of going through my favorite sheet of paper that you signed me on that causes great consternation for me. This is A1 employment report. And I still am stunned by the fact that we continue to talk about this unemployment rate, when the interplay between these last two, what I'm saying here, I'll read the bottom line here. It talks about the non-institutional population. It talks about the people that are available for employment. And then it talks about the people that are employed, the unemployed, and then there's this other column which continues to grow, which is this not available for employment, somehow not employed, on disability, whatever it is. So you've got 6 million people unemployed, which is terrifically low, okay, which your president will tell you every day, every minute if you listen to him. Yet the column after that has grown to over 95.5 million. So one, if you shift
Half a million people from this no man's land column back over to the unemployed. All of a sudden, the unemployment rate goes to like 5, and everybody's consternation. But really, the two columns together are 101 million people, which they've been forever, right?
Right.
So it almost doesn't matter. I mean, if you go back to 2013, we had 11 million unemployed. Now you got 90 million that are in no man's land, 91 million. You're at the same spot. You haven't picked up anything, Carl. I mean, you picked up some people employed. Actually, not even that many employed. Well, yeah, you have. You picked up like 20 million employed. So, but I'm saying the unemployment number versus the last column really doesn't. But if these guys, were you the one who was telling me that when people fall off the employment rolls, they take you from the one column and put you in the other because if you're no longer, allegedly, if you're taking your unemployment check, you're looking for a job, right?
And when right. That's yeah. The allegation is that in order to get unemployment, you have to be seeking a job.
Right, and you're supposed to check in and, in theory, right. Let them know that I did this interview, that interview. In fact, I don't know if anybody ever does that. But when they go from 28 weeks during crisis time, where the Fed, I mean, kick me if I'm wrong here, the normal unemployment is 14 weeks, I think. And if there's a crisis time and the Fed decides that we should go to 28 weeks or longer.
The Fed doesn't do that. That's Congress.
Okay, but I'm sorry. The federal government.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Federal government. The additional part now becomes on them, not the state. Correct.
That's right. And then the other thing that goes with that, though, is that takes people out of the not in labor force number.
Right. So what I'm saying is, if you decide things are better now, and you get rid of the 28 and go back to the 14, anybody who's in that 14 when they roll off, by definition, you're saying people are no longer looking for a job. They're now in the not-in-labor force. So you essentially drop the rate yourself.
Right, and then the other thing that's kind of nasty about this is that the original unemployment that you get, the base level, is not a welfare program because there is a tax associated with that. Okay?
Right.
So when you're working, even though it is illegal for your employer to list that on your pay stub, they nonetheless do pay it. And the amount of tax they pay has a lot to do with how many people they fire. Right? I mean, our rate used to get slammed all the time because, you know, we were a relatively small company. I'd fire a couple people, all of a sudden it goes up until it hits the cap and then it doesn't go up anymore. So that's not a welfare program, but all the extensions during recessions are. Because they're unfunded.
Okay. Right, okay. And what I was mentioning the other day, but knowing you were behind today, is that if you go back to 2008, actually 2009, where the I'm sorry, 2010, where the unemployment rate made 9.6%, you had 139 million people working and 83 million people in this other column.
Right.
And now you're up to, you've picked up 20 in the, in the labor column, actually, you picked up 17, and you've picked up 12 in the other one. Although you have dropped people out of the unemployment, so you're almost kind of at the same spot. If you add the two together from 2010, the people who were unemployed versus last column was 97 million, and now when you look at it today, you're at 101 million. So you really haven't gained at all in employed versus not employed. I won't call them unemployed. Versus not in oil. Matter of fact, you've lost a little, really, since the worst year unemployment, which was 2010. You really haven't gained anything.
That's true. And then and part of the reason for that is once you manage to qualify for disability, if you can get on SSDI, you get almost $30,000 a year cash, tax free.
And
okay. Now, and it gets better than that. Because 2 years after you qualify for that, you also qualify for Medicare, irrespective of your age.
Okay, so, but
so I get free health care essentially. So okay, and since I'm very low income, my Part A and Part B premiums are essentially zero.
And can I go deliver Chinese food and pizza and make another $200 a week? And
don't get caught. Yes.
Okay.
There are plenty of people and you know, disability for those people who truly, you know, I mean, you know, you have an arm cut off, a on the job accident or something like that. I mean, there really is a purpose for it. However, the number of people who are allegedly disabled yet fully able to go out there and work, they just aren't high enough skilled to make more than that on a tax-adjusted basis, is astounding.
Well, it's also kind of depending on sort of where you are, Carl, and you know, let's say be nice to people. When the I don't know, I forgot what the guy titled it, but part of the, it was the Washington Post. It was about a 3-4 day or 3-4 week article where he, it wasn't the title of it, so it's hard for me to find it, but he basically talked about the horseshoe of despair, where he went from West Virginia down to Alabama, right, across and up into Arkansas, those whole areas. I mean, there's whole counties where, right, where people are, 45% of the people are on disability or something. And, but you read some of the individual stories of people who really didn't want to be on disability. There are people that worked in say nursing homes without having those machines to help people get out of bed and so forth. And other factories where this one lady said her back's all messed up and she's in her 50s. And when she listed the job she'd had, it doesn't surprise me at all. Her back's messed up.
Right.
You know, I mean, she said, just down here, she goes, I don't know a person who ever had a job where they sat down.
Yeah.
She basically was saying, if you put me someplace in front of a computer and show me what to do, I could work. And actually wouldn't mind it. But down here, there's nothing like that.
Well, but then here's the other thing too, is that not only is there nothing like that, but even if you started putting call centers there or something like that, right, instead of in the Philippines, for example, the problem is those jobs don't pay well enough and it's not worth it. So, it's not just the fact that you get nearly $30,000 a year tax free in cash. And remember, you don't got to pay, you pay no taxes on this, okay? It's free money. But then on top of that, you get the free health care for life, and by the way, you qualify for Section 8 housing, which means you also get free housing for life.
Right.
All right. Now, how many of those jobs, assuming that somebody stuck a call center there, do you think they'd actually manage to get anybody to work there when there's no possible way they could pay somebody $20 an hour?
Well, I guess this goes back to, and boy, talk about before Matty Weber's time, back to your favorite president, Tricky Dick. Tricky Dick was not a dumb man. And he basically said you needed something. Remember his negative income tax?
Yeah.
The deal was you just sent in your stuff. And if you had no dough, if you wrote in and said, Matt Weber, income zero, you essentially got a check for, whatever, $2,500. I forget what it was, but this never got passed because the moral hazard. But Tricky Dick's point was, look, you got these people paying, making 30, whatever you're saying, $30,000 a year. You got to find a way where if they go get a job that they only give back $1 for every $3 they make at certain kind of jobs or something. There's got to be a way that it's not one or the other, Carl. And I just don't think we're collectively smart enough to do that, or we don't want to.
No, and that's basically the problem, is that if you tell me, if I'm relatively low skilled, okay, and you tell me, look, you if you go take this job being a greeter at Walmart, and you're going to make $15 an hour. Well, that's $15 an hour before taxes. And, oh, by the way, the free health care goes away, and so does the Section 8 housing and everything else. Why would I not sit around and drink beer all day?
Right. But I have to believe that if somebody like that walked in and I'd say, well, can you drive? Well, yeah, we've had nothing but storm damage. Here's what I want you to do for like Glenn Campbell, the lineman for the county. I'm going to give you this car, and I want you to go on this route every month, and let me know what do these poles look like. Do people look like they're leaning? Whatever it is, I want you to inspect this from the car. Whatever, let me know if this river's high.
Right.
I mean, I'll pay you. I'll give you the car. I'll pay you $10 an hour. And by the way, you got to kick $1 an hour back or $2 to the disability. So, if he did that, and next year we only paid the guy $26, I'd be happy with that, Carl. I mean, there's got to be some blend here. I mean, there needs to be some common sense to this, and there doesn't
seem. But there's not, and there won't be. And so, you take this, you take the tax load that this generates, which is enormous. All right, this is essentially what is driving the negative cash flow on the Social Security accounts, which is, you know, a nasty truth, but it's a big part of it. It's not the whole thing, but it's a big part of it.
So if somebody is 45 and they go on this disability, okay, and they all of a sudden we pick up their health care, does that come out of the Social Security piece of the pie or the Medicare piece of the pie?
Well, it comes out both, because the disability payment comes out of Social Security.
Right.
But then the Medicare side, the free health care, comes out of the Medicare side.
So in other words, the Social Security side doesn't essentially pay Medicare for the Medicare side. There's no transfer there.
Medicare is kind of a funny system, because there are premiums assessed for Part A and Part B. You have to pay that. But if your income's low enough, those premiums are basically zero. They're very low. So I mean, you can, and then you get the hybrid thing, because some people, well, retired people, not so much people on disability, because they typically choose not to. But retired people will, in many cases, buy an Advantage plan. So then there's some premium kickback that goes on there. So it's, you know, the accounting gets a little wonky on the Medicare side, but not for people on disability for the most part.
Okay, so you picked that. So that becomes a federal program, not Medicaid.
Correct. And see, here's the thing. Medicaid, and this is one of the things I yelled about when Obamacare was being debated. One of the things that Obamacare did was encourage states to capitate Medicaid.
Okay. All right,
and a few states had already done it, but basically what that means is, for people who aren't, you know, don't pay attention to this kind of thing, is that they take the entire amount spent in a state for Medicaid, they divide it by the number of people on it, and that's how much there is imputed to you as a person on Medicaid, whether you use it or not. Okay?
Well, that's interesting math, but okay.
Well, that's how they do it. And okay. It's the same way HMOs capitate their policies.
Right, oh, yeah.
It's the same deal. The hospital gets paid, you know, $200 per person whether they show up at the hospital or not. All right. So the problem with this is, the law is that from 55 to 65, if you're on Medicaid, that is a lien against your estate. All right?
Okay.
Now, if you use it, that's just, because why should you get to use it for free and then die and have a $1 million house and your kids get it, right? That doesn't seem to make a lot of sense.
Right.
However, in a state where it's capitated, what if you didn't use it?
Yeah, well, and then, yeah, same spot.
Well, you get a $100,000 lien against your estate.
Right. That's bizarre.
And oh, by the way, you never went to the doctor.
I think we need to, that's what we were talking about with Kevin earlier, Carl, we got to let you go here, but somewhere along the line, I mean, and I applaud Trump for pulling scabs off places that should have had him off, but somewhere along the line, there's got to be a team to at least try and address the one scab before you put all the next one off. Otherwise, you're going to have just chaos, and I hope we're not getting there. All these things, I think, have solutions, to be honest with you. We have some reasonable people in this country, maybe even some of them in Congress, if we give them a chance. We're not giving anybody a chance, I don't think.
I don't know that you're going to see anything. You know, I mean, the demagoguery on all sides is just a little crazy.
Well, I mean, it will be until you come up with a solution of anything. To where people can say, hey, look, you're way over here. You felt this way about this issue. And by the way, we've incorporated that. And you way over here, you felt this way about this issue. And by the way, we've addressed that as well. We got something here we think might work. If you have that, maybe you could actually, the solution might bring about a little, I won't say camaraderie, but at least the ability to sit there for a second with each other. But if you don't have anything, all you do is keep arguing. I think.
Yeah, I would like to see some sort of, you know, put the swords away long enough that we're not trying to chop each other's heads off, because there may be somewhere that, you know, you can find some common ground. The problem is neither side wants to give the other anything that they can claim is good.
Well, that's right, and maybe next time you're on, I had to do one of those things when I was on the SIBO in one of the committees, and boy, people were on both sides of the issue like there was no tomorrow. And the only way I got away with it, Carl, honestly, and this is, I think, the problem today, is the vice chairman put me in charge of that committee. It had to do with inequity crowds, who got what piece of a trade, the specialist versus the other people. And, right. And everybody on both sides couldn't stand the fact that I was going down this road. But because I was an index trader, I was never able to be accused. I mean, no matter what, everybody always thought I was an honest guy. I had a pretty good reputation. And I was an index guy. So I could never be accused of having a dog in the fight. And,
right.
And so we were able to come to a conclusion after many, many contentious meetings. But if I'd have been on one side or the other, I could never even have tried. You know, the fact that I really was an impartial arbitrator. Cause I never traded equity crowd in my life, you know, so I could never have done that if I didn't have that going for me. So I don't know how if you're considered to be on one side or the other, I don't see how the hell you can ever pull one of these things off that really are this contentious. And they don't.
Yeah, I don't either. And that's part of the problem is I think we're, and looking at the timeline, it's my contention that by 2024, game's up.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. Carl, thank you very much, buddy. As usual, terrific stuff. SP Futures up 18 and a quarter. We've got JP Morgan is up 327. It's running away like a scalded cat. However, Wells Fargo now is only up 27 cents. So, one way up and one not so much. We'll be right back, Stocks and Jacks. Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of HomeSource Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456, or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold. The idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, welcome to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tim Al. It's Matt Weber on the board. SP futures up 17 and a quarter. NASDAQ futures up 36.50. We're off to the races today, even though not having much of a day yesterday. Kind of flat market wide, but this morning individual stocks. In the Dow, we got all kinds of stuff. Virtually every stock in the Dow is up except CVX, Chevron, which are buying Anadarko. Chevron's actually down almost $6, 5.79. Other than that, we've got Boeing up 5. We've got J.P. Morgan up 302, with the straddle was only like $1.50. So I'm going to say the last two earnings things, and I wouldn't. Well, first of all, I would never recommend a trade, but usually, if you had the stones and the money, if you sold every straddle on earnings days, you might end up ahead. Of course, nobody could do that. I wouldn't let anybody do that as a firm here. But usually, the sellers win a little bit. The last couple of earnings things, I think the guys that have been buyers in a straddle have been winners. I mean, these banks usually, everybody knows what they're going to come out with, but this kind of surprised them, the J.P. Morgan side. They said Wells Fargo is only up 24 cents, so that's kind of right where they started. All right, so over in Europe, we've got DAX now up 83, so that's more, 0.7%. FTSE up 23.3%, CAC around up 20.4%, because it looks like they have more time again to keep working on this Brexit deal. Nikkei up 159.7%, Shanghai down 1, so call that flat. Hang Seng up 70.2%. We've got oil up a bunch this morning. Oil is up 90 cents, 64.48. Brent up 80 cents, 71.63. RBOB gas, 204. And we've got gold back, it's not as much as it was, up 220, 12.95. Silver up 11 cents to 14.98. They sort of can't get out of the way because the dollar's fairly strong, and the interest rate hint yesterday was if CPI keeps going up that much and PPI, then all of a sudden they might have to raise rates again. I don't know if I buy that, but that was the story. We got Disney as a big mover this morning as well. A lot of big movers. I don't even have to go through any of these. Disney's up $7 as they come out and saying their new streaming service, $12.99 a month is the price. I don't know exactly what's in that, but we'll have Maddie report.
Supposedly they're gonna be the end of Netflix.
That's the story as of yesterday. I don't know if I buy that. Maddie, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
42 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. The expressways are behaving themselves. It's been a nice and quiet Friday morning this morning, which happens often on Fridays, but not always. But we're looking pretty good out there. Edens looks okay. Kennedy, about 45 minutes or so from O'Hare into downtown. Eisenhower and Stevenson are our slowest moving expressways, but no accidents or issues to report. Dan Ryan, I-57 and the Bishop Ford are looking good too. Same with Lakeshore Drive in both directions and the suburban tollways. Off the expressways, looks like we have that closure still remaining on the northwest side. Harlem Avenue northbound between Addison and Waveland is closed due to an earlier crash. That crash happened at about 6:30 this morning, and they still have crews on the scene, so that was obviously a significant crash, and that's affecting the northbound Harlem Avenue. Just to the east of there, Milwaukee Avenue at Sunnyside, which is a block north of Montrose, there's flashing traffic lights that are causing a bit of a slowdown. On the south side, no issues to report off the expressways, and then out in the suburbs, everything's looking okay. So off to a good start this morning. Weather today, we'll have lots of sunshine, but cool temperatures, 6 or 7 degrees below normal, a high of just 52, and it's going to be some high wind gusts as well. So you'll still need a jacket out there, but at least it'll be better than it's been the last couple of days. Right now, it is mostly clear and 47 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, rain in the forecast and a high of 74 today. Right now it's overcast and 68. In sports, Cubs took 2 of 3 at home from the Pirates, winning last night 2-0. They welcome Mike Trout and the Angels into town for a weekend series. This afternoon's game is a 1:20 first pitch. White Sox were off last night. They travel to New York and take on the Yankees for a 3-game set in the Bronx. Diamondbacks lost to the Padres 7-6. Masters 2019 is underway. Round 1 action from Augusta saw Bryson DeChambeau and Brooks Koepka, both U.S. Golfers, tied for the top of the leaderboard at 6-under. Phil Mickelson is one shot back at 5-under in third place. Tiger Woods posted a 2-under score. He's tied for 11th. Chief.
Maddie, why is the Masters on this weekend?
I have no idea.
You're my sports guy. You're supposed to know all this stuff. John Neal, how are you, bud?
Good morning. How you doing, guys?
All right. Why is the Masters on this weekend?
Why is it on this weekend? I have no idea.
I believe it was when Bobby Jones first put the course there and wanted it to be a super high-end tournament. They picked the weekend when before there were planes. Spring training would end in Florida. And while all the players and all the sports writers were heading back to get the opening day, you know, you didn't end spring training on a Sunday and start on a Monday like you could now with planes. The essentially the travel weekend, I believe, was the weekend he picked for the Masters. So all the sports writers would drop in and cover the tournament on their way back. Not all, but some. So he ended up getting a lot of people who maybe wouldn't have taken the train from New York or Boston or Chicago down to Atlanta just to do it, or down to Augusta just to do it.
Huh.
Sort of interesting.
Yep.
Because, I mean, probably this was the weekend when you had a 154-game schedule, Matty. Baseball probably started, what, next week, right?
Yeah.
And I'm not sure how long that was the reason, but I think it had something to do with why he picked it. Jan, what do you sort of make of this? We had big scare in the Chinese market yesterday. Don't have to worry about that. How many people, I'll ask you, Matty Weber, this. How many people around the country that are in the market after the last quarter of last year swore on a stack of Bibles in their dreams or nightmares every night that if the market ever got back to where it was before, this time for sure they would lighten up or protect? Please, God, if it ever gets back there, I promise to at least lighten up a little bit. And now that we're pretty much all the way back, not one of those people is going to sell or protect.
Oh, yeah. No question. I mean, that's the, I'll just rock to sleep again.
Well, this time for sure, the president has spanked the Fed. they're never going to go off the reservation. They're never going to raise interest rates again. We got it figured out. Keep your hands in the boat. Don't rock the boat. Every single stock in the Dow is up today, except for Chevron, who bought another company. We are absolutely off to the races, and isn't everybody happy that a big bank made a lot of money on your money? I mean, it is good if you own the bank, because we have clients that obviously do, so I'm very happy for them. And I think I might be long the XLF, so that's up. So, you know, I'm actually very happy this is happening, but on a non-market, just anecdotal world view, aren't we all happy that Bank America made money? Or J.P. Morgan. Bank America's Monday. Doesn't that make your weekend better, Jen? Just saying.
No, actually, but that's all right.
That's okay. That's So what do you make of, we got a big bounce back in oil. The XLE keeps acting. XLE is the part of the S&P 500 that's oil-related. So it's your Chevron, it's your XLE. As a matter of fact, the XLE, I've got a pre-market, is up 96 cents. That's with Chevron being down $5. So it's really off to the races this morning. If you count the Chevron out of there, well, you can't because it's an index. But they whenever we get up here, the volatility, implied volatility options, seems to want to go down a little bit, Jan. So, today is kind of an outlier. I mean, we've got every time I want to sell calls in there, the volatility wants to go down. But are we gonna finally break through? Are we gonna have 70-hour oil? I mean, if we are, I got to believe this XLE is going to be pushing 75 easy, you know, because it's been lagging. I don't know.
This just might be enough to, you know, cause all that to happen, to be honest with you. You know, be kind of basing a little bit here and a little bit of sideways action, and this just might be enough to push it through, though.
Well, what for the listeners, what I'm talking about is when you're investing for people, if you have these stocks that are essentially dependent on, quote, a commodity, you can either trade the GLD, which is the gold ETF,
right,
or the GDX, which is the gold miners, or you can trade oil. But the last thing you want to do, the difference between the GDX, I'm saying the GLD, that is an ETF. Now, this is actually very important. That is an ETF where people, somebody who runs that ETF actually has the gold, right? So it's not, if you buy the GLD, you're buying a piece of a gold vault, essentially. So they have what they call the physical. If you buy the oil ETF, which is the USO, they do not have the physical. They have futures that they have to trade every 3 months or whatever. So it's a decaying asset. So you don't want any part of that ETF, especially on a long-term basis. I mean, if somebody were to call me up and say, somebody, who the hell would do this? Somebody from the clouds and say, not the cloud, the clouds, hey, Chief, oil's going to be up $10 tomorrow. I mean, would I have some clients, first of all, I'm never going to get that phone call, but if I did and wanted to, if you got a message from God, would that be insider trading, Jen? I don't know.
No, because he's omnipotent.
Well, but he's not an insider. Right?
Right, because he's omnipotent. Yeah, so omnipotent.
That's a good question, man. If the big guy upstairs appeared in front of you and he said, you know, buy Northern Tissue and you bought it, do you go to jail?
I shouldn't, because like I said, you know.
I don't know. What do you think, Manny?
Knows all. So it's not an insider trading.
He's not an insider at Northern Tissue.
I think you should go to the insane asylum if you think God appeared in front of you and told you a stock to buy.
Well, if he did and I bought it, let's put it this way. If he did and I bought it and I didn't buy some for you, you'd be pissed. Am I right about that?
No, you're not, but yeah, that's okay.
Your girlfriend would be pissed. Just because
that goes with the no atheist in foxhole.
Yeah, right? just because Maddie doesn't believe in God, if you had a tip from a boy, did we get involved? I know she'd say.
Right.
I could listen to you.
Okay, well, why? I don't know anything. I never got a tip in my life that was worth anything.
Exactly.
Yeah.
What makes you think this would be different?
Well, I mean, I said if. Anyway. but, it, you know, so same thing with but I would buy the USO, okay, for a day, because it's the world's worst product. Because the thing decays. Because every time you roll the future, you lose money on this thing. So it's the world's worst product. Why it's still out there, I don't know. But if somebody were to tell me oil was up $10 tomorrow, I would buy the USO for a day. And we probably wouldn't make the full 15%. We'd make 12, but that's better than a sharp stick in the eye, right, John?
Yep.
So anyway, it's not a good ETF. But when you do, so I've always put my investors that when we're looking for the oil situation is in the XLE. Although, since I now have access to a lot of these trades that are done, option trades, the Giants Heat Seeker thing, people have been buying a living bleep out of the XOP, John, which is what, oil service?
Yeah, I think so.
Have you done much in there? I've never done a trade in there. We tried to do some stuff yesterday and didn't get filled. Have you ever done anything?
I have never, Tom. I have never.
But that's another. And I know a lot of traders that I know, that people that either have big accounts or manage for people, a lot of people use the XOP instead of the XLE. I've always had a shtick where if I told people like what I'm doing for them, and if you say the S&P, actually there's not the spider, which is the S&P 500. There used to be nine like little spiders that added up to the big spider. So you've got the XLF, which is the financial area. You've got the XLE. What's the other one? The XLH is the healthcare, XMH, something, something.
Anyway, so they're itsy bitsy spiders?
Yeah, but if you bought all of them, you'd add up to the big one. So essentially, if the spider, say it's everything's 1/9. So if somebody gives you $1 million and said, I want to be in the spiders, I want to be in the S&P, but I want to overweight oil. What I would probably do or could do, if the guy wanted everything in the market, protected or not, I could buy $900,000 worth of say the spider, which is all 500, and another $100,000 in the XLE. So instead of, you know, 1/9 oil, he's 2/10 oil. Right? So if somebody wanted to do that, but as long as I stayed within the nine, it was always easier to explain. Okay, but there are ETFs outside of those nine that I don't. Actually, now there's 10, Jan, because they split the real estate piece out of the XLF. So the XLF.
Right,
now,
right, you get that REIT part in there, right?
So there's actually 10 of them now, and there's a real estate REIT group that used to be in the XLF that's now separate. So there's now actually 10 little spiders. But I've always stayed in there because it was easier to explain. But there are other spiders that are pretty darn good. They actually have spiders. There are other ETFs that actually have the stock in the vault, and the XOP is one of them. But it's not quite as big denominated with the Exxon, Chevron, Schlumberger. The reason why the XLE has been dogging it is because Schlumberger has been an absolute pig. mean, last year it started out 79 and went to 39. It's the third biggest stock in the index. Well, that's why the XLE has been dragging. But now in the last week, SLB, Schlumberger, is up 10%. So the comeback in there makes me think I probably would like to stay in the XLE. Even though yesterday, John, all the bullish call activity was in the XOP. I mean, I guess one's as good as the other, but if you're, maybe, I'm going to say the oil service, I'm going to lob this one out there, and you tell me if I'm wrong. I'm going to say if you wanted a bigger chunk of the horizontal drilling places, Bartlett and the place down in Texas, those kind of places, I'm saying maybe you get a little more of that in the XOP. Because I don't think Chevron, Schlumberger, and Exxon, have as big a slice of the new drilling here in this country
and if they do, it's not the major part of
their
you know, drilling portfolio by any stretch of the imagination, the Permian Basin and all that stuff.
Right. So I mean, if somebody actually wanted to trade the difference, I would make sure I looked up the first 10 stocks in each. But I'm going to guess you're going to get a little more fracking bit in your XOP than you will the XLE.
Right, exactly.
As to how much more, I don't know. Probably a little more. So whatever it was, the people yesterday buying all the calls were buying them in the XOP. So so there. But you have to kind of know what these indices are. But what do you make of this Anadarko purchase, Dan? I mean, it's Chevron down $5. I assume Anadarko's up a bunch. I haven't checked, but. Are we going to start getting some consolidation all over the place? Just what we need is more consolidation. I'll lay a few more people out.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I mean, we really haven't seen a ton in this industry, I don't see it as being anything earth-shattering, and I don't see it as being anything overly bad. I'm somewhat lukewarm to it, to be honest.
I've got Anadarko up $15. Yahoo!
Yep.
If you had Anadarko. So you closed last night at what? $46 is trading $61.75. That's not bad. That'll work.
Yep, you have it. Exactly.
So, Maddie, what if the big guy upstairs, I'll go back to my original question, would have said yesterday, buy Anadarko Petroleum for everybody who believes in me and I left you out?
That'd be fine.
Oh, God. Wait till I talk to your brother and girlfriend. They'll both be dumping you. What about the dog?
I'm okay leaving money for the next guy, as you say, Chief. I don't have to win on every trade.
What about Venkman? Diamond-studded ball, new leash?
He doesn't need any of that.
He doesn't need it?
He has his chicken and peas dog food. He's got his toys.
He's happy.
Goes for a walk. That's all he needs.
He's happy. Anyway, John, do you have an opinion on Disney going to open up at a new all-time high this morning, up 720? Manny, you know more about this than me. I got Disney up, like I said, 720. I got Netflix. Where else Netflix? It's down, I think. Down $8. Is this an immediate winner? And is Netflix the one getting harpooned?
Oh, I mean, from my perspective, I can't see Netflix getting harpooned. I mean, they're just another competitor to Netflix as far as that goes. Will they do put out a quality service out there that some people buy, especially kids with children? Why not? That will buy into that service without question, and some others. I know they get some things with ESPN and whatnot too.
Is that going to be on? Are you going to get ESPN for the $6.99 a month? I'm doubting that. I don't know.
Right.
I'm asking. Maddie, you have any idea?
I don't know. All I do know is that they can certainly compete with Netflix, and I think that's a great thing, and hopefully they put out a good product, and maybe it'll bring Netflix's cost down. The great thing about Netflix that no one talks about is that they have the best technologically sound streaming service and app in the industry, and it's not even close. Meaning, anytime I pull up Netflix, I can stream something, and it's perfect quality every time. It always works. Disney, who owns ESPN, ESPN's app is horrendous. It barely works. It's a big event, and there's a lot of people streaming it at the same time. It's choppy. It constantly kicks you out. It's clunky, and Disney owns ESPN, and so I'm willing to bet if they use the same people for this streaming service as the ESPN one, I would be very skeptical that it's going to be anywhere close to the quality of the Amazon streaming service or certainly the Netflix. Whoever Netflix uses, I don't know why every company doesn't use these guys, and maybe they just have better developers. I don't know, but
They have a service that always works. It's right. Dependable and it's high quality and it works. And a lot of other apps can't say that. And I wouldn't be surprised if Disney struggles in that regard.
Well, Manny, who does? Let's talk about this maybe next Tuesday, Jan, when you're on, because I'm curious. How is this going to fit? Doesn't some of the content that Netflix and stuff goes on, aren't those like Disney old movies and old shows and stuff? I mean,
a small percentage, but yeah, some.
But how's this going to affect like Amazon Prime and Hulu and these other guys? Are they going to be the part looking out?
It's going to be, you know, people, they're all going to compete for some of the old stuff, but Netflix produces a majority of their stuff now as their own content.
Okay.
And yeah, that's the big difference is that they have a lot of hit shows Netflix does. There are a lot of, you know, things that are really...
Well, everybody yesterday said you might as well kick Apple out right now. Is that true, or you think not true, or to be determined?
I have no idea. I've never seen Apple.
I've never even...
Well, all their plans are going to be, they're going to be a competitor. I mean, anyway, SP Futures up 1850. NASDAQ Futures up 3750. Every stock in the Dow up except for Chevron, who's buying somebody who's up 15 bucks. So the net there is probably even. We'll be back on Monday, Stacks and Jacks.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.